It's the Tiltcast, episode 583, Food for Dwarves.
And this week, guys, we talk all things Souls, Elden Ring, Slay the Spire, and 7 Days to Die's 1.0 release. Stay tuned.
It's like a pot pie for your hands. We live in a mountain. It's the Tiltcast. It's an M-rated show. Rusty's got cocks in his mouth. I'm Nos.
I'm Jason.
I'm Rusty.
And with the three of us, you're going to get about 30 minutes of bullshit. Some games, some news. What do you got in your eye?
I don't know. It just like... Right when you hit record, something dropped in my friggin' eyeball, and now it wants to pop right out.
That's inconvenient.
It's very inconvenient. I could say that it's subpar. Very subpar. I'm just gonna tear up over here. Take it away, guys.
It's been a week.
It has been a week.
Oh, shit, it's been longer than that for me.
Yeah, Rusty, it's been like a month.
It hasn't been a month. It's been close, though.
3 weeks?
It's not a month, technically.
I mean, we had... I don't know. I'm not counting.
There was things and stuff and things.
We'll put a date on it. It is Saturday, May 18th, 82 degrees at 8:16 p.m. Central Time.
82? Man, that's 74 here. Yeah. That's hot. It's hot enough to turn on the AC finally.
Oh, yeah. It was a sweaty nut walk earlier today, and I was going to mow, and I was like, nah, I don't want to mow.
And... funny thing is that it's just starting for the old Oklahoma. You're gonna get up to triple digits here soon.
Yeah, the older we get, the faster the summer goes by, and I really gotta get my pool up. I was supposed to cut some tree limbs today too, and I decided to play some video games. I haven't had a free Saturday in a long. I haven't had a free Saturday since before all the bullshit started happening last month. So yeah. I took advantage of that and played some games.
Yeah. I haven't had a free Saturday in a while. Just because I wasn't on the cast doesn't mean I wasn't busy.
Yeah, we know. You were eating mushrooms or something last week?
No, I wasn't eating mushrooms,
man. It's a mushroom festival, right?
It was a mushroom festival. That's right. You know,
what does that mean? Why did you ditch us for mushrooms?
Okay. All right. So
what did you do in your village?
A little thing up north
in your village
that happens in small towns, and they pick a thing and they do a festival about it. There is in Traverse City, there's the Cherry Festival in a little town called Harrietta, not too far away from here. It's the Blueberry Festival. I'm sure there's a Strawberry Festival somewhere close by. Ours just happens to be the Mushroom Festival. We, in our little river valley, have the perfect conditions to grow more Al mushrooms right around Mother's Day. So, these Morel mushrooms, I mean, if you ever looked at the price for Morel mushrooms, they're like $100 a pound or more. And they're delicious. They're like a meaty mushroom. They grow great with steak. And it's just a thing. Like, there's hundreds of pounds of mushrooms that, you know, are collected, you know, in small areas. around here, and they're all over the place. So, right around Mother's Day, our little town celebrates the fact that there's a bunch of people that go out into the woods and pick mushrooms. And that includes northern things like a mud bog, euchre tournaments, and a flea market. There's also a parade. I, on the other hand, didn't get to do many of those things because I was too damn busy making pasties. So I was in a kitchen for the entire weekend making pasties. And yeah.
You were doing that for the Illuminati?
For the Illuminati. It's not the Illuminati. Look.
No, it's the enemies of the Illuminati. That's what the Masons are.
Please, please, guys. Seriously, please. It's not.
But they're a good organization. I joke.
It's not what the Hollywood people want you to believe it is. It really isn't. But basically, it's a charitable organization that does some, you know, some stuff. It's a organization with secrets, not a secret organization. So it's a thing. But I can tell you right now, I've had a lot of fun doing shit for the Masons, but also I've also, gotten real good at making pasties. I've never made a pasty in my life before starting, before working with them. And
what's a pasty again?
A pasty is,
this is, if you not can imagine
what a pot pie is without gravy, that's basically a pasty.
So it's dry?
It's dry, but it's not unpleasant. So you add your sauce to it. You add gravy, or you add like ketchup, or you know something to it. But it was initially created as a portable lunch for copper miners, or miners in general. But in the copper mines, the miners would take pasties because they were basically, stable enough to just, put in a bag. And then they would have their hot gravy in a thermos. And they would use the hot gravy to warm up the pasty while they're in the mines. So
it's food for dwarves.
It's basically food for dwarves. Yes. It is very much food for dwarves. But the only difference in the ingredients for a pot pie versus a pasty is rutabaga. Rutabaga is a, have you ever had rutabaga?
Yeah. Well, I've tried to use it in keto variants of mashed potatoes. And fried potatoes. Yeah,
it's very popular as a keto variant or keto replacement for mashed potatoes. I used it for stew, and that was a very interesting stew because it's not.
It's a different flavor.
It's peppery. That's the so a rutabaga is basically a radish, just a really big mild radish, and. When you cook it up, it has a peppery quality to it. So it's meaty like a potato, but has that peppery quality. It's a unique flavor. And when you add it into a pasty, it makes for, it's its own pepper. You don't even have to add pepper to it. So it's so much, so great. The bad part about it is when you cook rutabaga, your house smells like rutabaga. It has its own smell. And every time I go cooking pasties, I come back with Eau de Pasty as a fragrance for the rest of the day. It's bad enough that I have to wash my coat, my hat, and everything that I'd worn at the at the lodge, because it all smells like pasty. But yeah, that was basically what I did, last week. I did get a chance to go through the flea market, and flea markets are, like uptown, up north flea markets. There's vendors that buy the, made in China bullshit, like the stuff that you can get from Temu.
I've never shopped off Temu.
Huh?
I've never bought anything off Temu.
Well, you shouldn't. But anyway, it's a lot of knockoff stuff that you can kind of tell that it's all, knockoff, made in China bullshit. But the unique stuff that you find in this area is at the flea markets, you get like these vendors that have old tools, and like old dishes and pots and china and a bunch of other stuff that that were basically picked up from yard sales or estate auctions or shit like that from all around the area. So you find some really unique shit. There was this one guy that I guess bought a lot of stuff that included like old ammunition and old ammunition clips. So like M1 Garand freaking ammunition clips and stuff like that. I was like looking at those, I'm like, those are pretty neat. But yeah, it's hit and miss, but it's like going yard sailing. It's like going yard sailing all in a row, all in a line. But I always end up picking up these flavored almonds. They have a stand that's like got flavored almonds, and it's just they're candy. It's just amazing. And I've been munching on those for the last week, but it's been a hell of a couple of weeks. Like, there's a lot of shit that's changed. So, I mean,
you started growing hair?
Huh?
You started growing hair?
Oh God, no!
You have a beard?
Fuck. Yeah, no, nah, dude. No, I will never be able to grow a beard. I tried. I even tried the beard oil. Doesn't work. One of the things that I did is I actually started down another path for weight loss, because I'm a big boy, so I decided, I'm gonna talk to the doctor this time and be like, hey, I'm gonna do this right. I'm gonna go right there, talk to the doctor and see what happens. And he's like, here, let's try this thing out. It's a shot, but I take an take an injection, and it does wonders. Like, it's an appetite suppressant, and it makes you feel bad when you, it doesn't make you feel sick, it just makes you feel bad when you eat much. I don't know how a drug does that, but it makes you feel bad. Like, you ate too much, now go sit in the corner. If it makes you feel bad about it. It's worked. Guess how much I've lost in the last week.
How much?
I've lost 10 pounds.
Damn. Wish I could lose 10 pounds in a week.
I don't see that as sustainable, but generally you don't see.
That's some big like that. Poops.
Yeah, that's, well, I mean, yeah. I lost 10 pounds in the last week. Now, probably going to go, slower from here, because when you start keto, you have that initial drop in water weight, right? And then you just you have 1 to 3 pound losses from from there on out. And that's kind of what I'm expecting. But my mom was actually on this this same, well, I don't know if it's exactly the same because she's on a medical trial, but she's on a very similar drug, and she's lost 100 pounds. And I mean, that's half of my mom. So, well, more like a third of my mom, but still, it's significant. And seeing that there's some hope, maybe, to, you know, for me to be a normal human boy, maybe I can actually, you know, fit into some of those band t-shirts that you keep by. Yeah. But yeah, it's been a journey, and I'll tell you right now, you know, it's a different feeling, like having a normal portion and feeling full. That hasn't happened to me for, you know, a long, long time. So I'm hopeful. I'm definitely hopeful. But let's see. That's just another thing that's happened in the last couple of weeks. Man, I've got like 3 weeks worth of shit. What did you do for for the last week?
I don't know, Jason. What have you been up to?
You know, since we recorded last, did all the Mother's Day things on Sunday, and
oh yeah, what'd you do for Mother's Day?
Well, we did what Mama wanted. We cleaned out the big ass fucking weeds in the backyard, and I cooked her dinner.
Oh, so she put you to work. She wanted. Yeah. She put you to work. I see. So I have a thing, you know, that flea market. I have a thing where I take my mom and my aunts and my great aunt, you know, through the flea market. And I have her pick something out, like whatever she wants. You know, that's part one of Mother's Day. Part two is to find out throughout the day and what she's looking at, what to get her, because I am terrible at gifts, and and I wanted to get her something that she would use, right, or she would like. So I found that she wanted to have one of those Kinect Heart things that's blown by the wind and, you know, moves and looks pretty. I got one of those. And then I have a thing that happened, you know, up north here just recently. There was a bunch of northern lights, and the northern lights up here are freaking amazing. Just beautiful, you know, colors dancing in the sky. Just awesome. Right. My brother got a really nice picture of it and sent it to my mom. My mom fell in love with the picture. I had her send that picture to me, and I had it printed on a disc plate, and I'm going to give it to her tomorrow. It just came in. It looks badass.
Did you stick it in your backyard?
It was outside my brother's house. My brother took the picture, and I'm putting it on the display. So that is something that, you know, that we're doing as a, you know, as a unique Mother's Day gift. Like, this was taken by my brother and basically put on something permanent by me. So it'll be hanging up in the house. It's going to be amazing. You know, like I had to do a little bit of Photoshop work on it and stuff like that, just to tweak the image and stuff. But that's the thing that I did for Mother's Day. And I think she's going to flip out. I think she's going to enjoy it.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I'm no photographer, but you know, you get me, You get me down in front of Photoshop, I can make an image look good. So
nice. Yeah, we saw the lights somewhat down here, but
it was a big storm.
It was so far on the horizon that unless you were outside of Tulsa proper by a good bit, and you weren't on top of a hill, you weren't really going to see it.
Yeah, it was crazy.
But still, the fact that we actually got a view of it this far south, that doesn't happen very often.
No, it doesn't happen at all.
I can remember maybe one other time in my lifetime that it's happened.
Oh, man. I wish it was something like, that
really young.
I wish it was something that you could actually, like, you know, be up here for. I can't describe how beautiful it is. Just, you know, going up and, you know, going outside and looking straight up and seeing the lights dance above you is nuts. It's so surreal. It is one of the things that I missed about being up north, and it happens so rarely, you know, that you're outside at that time to catch it. But man, is it beautiful. It is just nuts. And the colors this time was just phenomenal. Pictures don't do it justice. And the pictures are pretty awesome.
You could only see it here with long shutter speeds. So I was trying really hard. So the night I started seeing pictures of it, because I didn't believe it, I went driving and went all the way out to my mom's house. And she lives on this area of Oklahoma is relatively flat. And so I was trying to get above the tree line. So I went to this hill that's by my parents' house. That's, I don't know, a couple hundred feet above the landscape. And did a long exposure, and the most I could get was a purple sky. And I think that was just because it was a long exposure, to be honest. It might have had something to do with the aurora. But, it just wasn't happening for me, or I just didn't catch it at the right time. Tried it again the next night. I was out in the middle of a park outside of town. I'm not going to say where because it's pretty close to my house. But there's a park directly south of me that you guys both know. And I was out there for a good bit with my shutter speed. I've got crazy ISO settings. Like I can go up to 512,000 ISO. Not that I would ever do that. But I was sitting at about a 4,000 ISO, which is nothing because I wanted a clear picture, and then a shutter speed of 1/3 second. And at that, it almost looked like daylight. The camera I use has really good light sensitivity. And I just couldn't catch it. I just started snapping pictures of silhouettes of the trees and reduced my shutter speed a little bit so that I could get some of the tree line. But then I started hearing like tons and tons of coyotes. Like I was just parked in the parking lot, had my cameras on the top of my car pointed at the tree line so that I'd have it stable for the long shutter speed, you know.
Right.
And it sounded like there were 100 coyotes behind me. I was like,
fuck that.
That's a lot of yipping. So I got my happy ass in the car and then rolled down the window just a little bit and took a few more shots. And I was like, I guess I'm just not going to get an aurora. I sat out there for an hour looking for, checking the skyline. And then, of course, there kept being people that, like, I'm pretty sure it was a cop, like, kept coming up behind me and, like, shining his lights at my car while I had my camera. And I pointed at my camera several times. And he just kept doing it. I was like, you're ruining my shot. I don't need this much light. And then he finally drove off. But, yeah. I wish I'd have seen it. There was obviously some people well outside of town with less light pollution that got some great pictures. Just tip for you, if you decide to do it with your phone on your phone camera, most phone cameras have a night shot mode. That's what you're going to want to use. And I would say that it uses AI to fill in a lot of the gaps. to help smooth out the picture. There's a lot of software in your phone camera to help realize that image for night shot. But what you ought to do is stabilize your phone when you do it. So, like, if you're outdoors, put your phone on something that's stable. And then that way, when it's doing a longer exposure, you don't get as much waviness. You get better clarity because it's taking a longer exposed picture.
Yeah.
And I'm used to shooting shots in very dark bars for different bands, like local bands. And when I do that, I'm sitting at like a 250 to 300 shutter speed. With an ISO of anywhere from 2,000 to 6,000. So, like, I'm used to shooting like that all the way wide open in the dark. So that part wasn't new to me, but shooting that slow is a little bit new to me. I haven't tried a lot of it.
Yeah, trying to set up something that's basically, like, you know, a composite or fucking...
if you need it sharpened... I've got some software. So if you've never used it, myself and a lot of other photographers use something called Topaz, and Topaz does a really good job of smoothing out, camera noise.
Mm-hmm.
It'll smooth out like motion blur a little bit. It's not like if you've got too much motion blur, like that's on you, but you can take that and smooth it out. So it almost looks like anti-aliasing. It doesn't sharpen it. It just makes it softer. But with something like the Aurora, like, that's okay because it's not clearly defined, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah. It actually looks better when it's got, you know, some bleed effect.
Right.
So it's that's, a lot of it. Like, you don't ever actually see really sharp Auroras. Around here, I've only ever seen one really sharp Aurora, and that was a long ass time ago. It was actually impressive. That stuff was like mesmerizing, staring straight up in the middle of the winter time, and it was white Aurora. It is not something you see at all. I've never seen it since. But it was like the, you know, if you imagine the light reflecting off of a snowdrift, that's what it looked like. It was so beautiful. It's just one of those things, man. It's a thing that I missed, you know, living so far south. But yeah, it's
so, but yeah, other than Mother's Day stuff, not done a whole lot. We've been pretty busy this week, so I've ended up I had to set Fallout 4 aside this week, and I've been actually playing Slay the Spire on my Nintendo Switch because it was on sale and I got it for $8. So I've been playing the shit out of that.
Slay the Spire. Like, I have not had a good run with the mage one, but I have done the warrior and the archer one. The red and the green one.
I've beat it with everybody.
Oh, the one that was like a machine, the autonomous.
That was the hardest one for me.
What?
That was the hardest one for me.
Yeah, that one sucked because you had to like cycle runes and shit like that. So like
you required you being really meticulous with your deck.
Yeah, you couldn't have just random shit thrown together. You had to build strategies before you even got into a fight.
It was just meant for people that were really familiar with the card mechanics is all. I couldn't play it right now. It would take me a while to get back to that spot where I remembered how everything kind of worked together. I ended up doing beef ribs for my mom. That was those were tasty. And then, you know, I helped her with a bunch of stuff around the house and helped her with some working on getting some pictures to sell motorcycles for that were my dad's for my mom. So ended up doing a lot of that. What did I make for you guys the day before that, or Friday last week, Jason? Oh, I made
smoked bologna.
And you weren't there.
I wasn't. I ended up not being there because my wife got Fridays mixed up and planned a date for us. So, you know, happy wife, happy life, right? So, but you tortured me with all those pictures as I was eating dinner with my wife.
Oh, what did you have that wasn't pork belly?
You made smoked bologna and pork belly while I was sitting there eating a chicken fried steak. And I was like, I looked directly at my wife when you sent those pictures and I said, now this is how you know I love you. I'm missing this. And I showed her the pictures.
I still cannot find Chubbs up here. That's the thing.
Like, Costco? You got a Costco?
Yeah, but I don't think it has. I don't think they carry it.
That's where I bought my last Chubb. It was like $8. And I ended up splitting it. I didn't split it. Me, John, and Dave ate half of a chub by ourselves and then ate like a third of a pork belly by ourselves. We ate all of that.
And wow.
I bought a huge pork belly. Like there's not a small size to it. So it's just like a whole pork belly. So I've used it for three different cookings because it was so much. I was putting it in 1 gallon freezer bags. So I cut it in half to feed the boys the first time, which I think you were there for that, Jason, where I made the sweet pork belly.
And that was delicious.
That was my best attempt at pork belly. Then I did a regular smoked pork belly for John and Dave because I was just making it along with everything else. And it came out really good. And then I tried to – just this last week, I was trying to get the crackling to work, you know, so I was grilling it. And that's a whole rigmarole. I'm going to have to figure that out a little bit better. I didn't get it quite right. But the idea was to get like that hard crust on the belly, on the fat. And I don't think I got it dry enough. So like the day before, I like took a fork and punctured the shit out of it, right? And then I dried it all the way off. At least I thought I did. And then I coated it in salt to try to draw out the moisture. But I think the salt crystals I used were too small. I just used more like regular Morton salt, right? But I covered the whole top with salt, and it drew out a lot of moisture, but not quite all of it. Like, I honestly could have left it in there a day, but, like, I had it in the fridge uncovered, trying to dry out the top. And then when I put it on the grill, I got the grill up to 550 degrees and offset the heat with the pork belly, and then tried to get the skin hard, and it got, like, crispy. But not quite as crispy as I wanted it. Like, not to where, like, it sounded like glass. So I got it pretty crispy, but it didn't bloom the way that I wanted it to. And then, you know, after you get the crisp on the crust, right, you're supposed to take it and put it in a pan. And in the pan, you fill it with, like, chicken broth or apple cider vinegar. I did apple cider vinegar, and I instantly regretted it. It tasted fine, but I don't like the taste of apple cider vinegar. And it sits in there so the meat doesn't overcook, but you can still build crust. You're supposed to cook it till the meat's like 185 or something like that. So I got it to that, but my crust wasn't done. It still tasted really good. Like, I just finished it for dinner today. Like, I've been eating on that for 3 days. I just made I made like the ultimate BLT. So I took the leftover pork belly and I sliced it, right? And then I take that sliced pork belly and I cooked it with like two strips of bacon. I cut the bacon strips in half and then take two slices of pork belly, put it in there and fry it like bacon and then make a BLT. And holy shit. That's scrumptious.
That sounds very scrumptious.
I'm a lot like a weird pork chop. That's kind of what it tastes like. But smoked, grilling it was nowhere as good. No way in hell as good as it was smoked. I may make more pork belly, Jason, for this next Friday. Like, I just can't get enough of it. It's so good.
I mean, you have me sold.
I may just smoke it.
It's just thicker bacon.
Well, it's uncured, so it's not as salty.
Well, that's true, but like still, when you put a rub on it and you smoke it, it like essentially just tastes like thicker bacon that you can actually get full on without having to like fry a pound and a half worth of bacon.
Yeah, like the way that I made it when Jason was here last, Rusty, I smoked it, I covered the top in a rub that I made, and then I used honey and a little bit of chili, which Jason may or may not. I used that to make it a little bit more robust, but I used a little bit of red chili in my rub. Not enough to really give it any heat, but just enough to make it more earthy, I guess would be the right flavor. But I was trying to tone it down so it wasn't quite so sweet, and it was still pretty sweet because I used a lot of honey. But yeah, I made that glaze and just let it melt down in its own glaze in little cubes and then, you know, served it up. I'm like, holy shit, it was good. It's just fatty, juicy, like you can cut it with a fork. It's stupid. It's just little blobs of delicious flavor. Like, I don't know any other way to describe it. And it's all, like, really, this is going to sound crazy, but it's all monounsaturated fat, so it's actually really good for you. The fat's really good for you. Now, in excess, of course, it's not. But the fat itself is not any worse for you than butter. It's just, you know, you're eating, like, half a pound of it. It's really good. Fat makes everything better. Almost everything better.
Especially bacon fat.
Yeah. Fuck, I'm like drooling thinking about it. Yeah, I've eaten so much pork belly in the last 3 weeks. And it's like, I bought that for like $32 and ended up sectioning it off in several sections. So I may do that again and then we can make pork belly sliders this time, like smoked pork belly sliders.
Stop it. You're overpowering my drugs here.
I mean, anybody can make pork belly. Like, man, we're just talking food. Again, I also played a lot of video games, as we all have.
Oh, my God. Have we?
In the last month, I have beaten Dark Souls 1, Dark Souls 2, gotten halfway through Fallout New Vegas, started a Hades 2 campaign, and almost finished Dark Souls 3 and started a game called Abiotic Factor.
Good Lord.
I've gotten some good amount of gaming on lately. And today, like, was no exception. I mean, I've played video games almost all day and listened to records almost all day and just sat my happy ass down. Like, the most physical thing I did today was try to run Lola a mile, which just about fucking killed me. But,
sweaty balls.
Super sweaty balls. But yeah, I'm almost done. So here's what it is. It's Shadow of the Erdtree comes out next month. And I wanted to go through my favorite Miyazaki games. I'm not a Sekiro fan. I know that's an unpopular opinion. Bloodborne's fine. Bloodborne's art style holds up, but I don't know. It is the hardest one, in my opinion, and I didn't know how long it was going to take me to beat it. So if I get to a point where I'm through with Elden Ring before Shadow comes out, I might start Bloodborne. But Bloodborne definitely, to me, is the hardest of those games. But now that I'm in a really good groove, like I'm one- and two-shotting most things. In Dark Souls 3, I did Ashes of Ariandel and beat that. The hardest part of that DLC is a tree root section. There you have to carefully drop down while assholes are shooting you with these great arrows, and getting that fucking timing down. I probably spent 10 attempts figuring out the fucking root thing again. But the boss at the end of that, or the boss, there's a boss with a bunch of wolves that is pretty fucking easy. And then there's a really cool boss. The DLC for Dark Souls 3 has some really cool bosses. There's one with this lady that has a scythe that's protecting her father, and they both get in the fight at the same time. And it's a three-phase fight. And I want to say that took me 4 or 5 attempts to really nail down with a strength build. I have played these a little bit different. I think it went pure magic in Dark Souls 1. I beat that in 30 hours or 35 hours or something. Magic super OP in the Souls games. And then in DS2, I did a Hex Faith Dex build, which is a crazy build. I way overleveled. That's because I was splitting my attention 3 different ways. But I had some Dex weapons mixed with Faith weapons mixed with Hex spells. And it's mostly for the Dark Blast, so I could have a good range. And that Dark Souls 2 is hard because the trash is bullshit in that game. And it's a good game. Don't get me wrong. All the Souls games are really good. But compared to 1 and 3, I can understand why I didn't like it as much. The invasion stuff is bullshit in that game because it's based on the amount of souls that have been in existence around you. You have a soul memory. So regardless if you have use the souls or not, the amount of souls, the amount of times things have given you souls, regardless if you spend them or not, adds to your soul memory. And that's the range of player that it matches with you. And if you die a bunch in some bullshit area in, what is it, the Sunken King, I think, or not the Sunken King, Old Iron Keep, I think is what it's called. There's one particular area where you got to run through a fucking dungeon, and I probably spent 40 attempts on that stupid motherfucking thing. And my soul memory got fucking high. I think I told Rusty that night. It's I think I've lost 300,000 souls right now.
It's nuts. Yeah.
I just stopped going for the souls. I was just trying to get through the area and try to get my timings down. And then, finally went through and just killed everything. The thing about DS2 is if you kill something 12 times, it stops spawning. So I just said, fuck it, I'm not bum rushing this. I'm going to clear the whole area out 12 times. And that's what I did. And then I finally got my timing down because I just wasn't doing so hot. My character had zero poise anyway. So if one thing hits me, I'm fucking staggered beyond belief. It's if you've seen those slap fight videos, it's when the big Russian guy hits the little skinny guy and he just looks flabbergasted, right? That's how little poise my character in DS2 had. He did not wear heavy armor. He was in rags all the time. And he just gets stunlocked by bullshit all the time. So you just know it's not. If I didn't roll through it, I was fucked. But anyways, that game actually took me quite a while to beat. I couldn't tell you the exact hours, but probably 55 hours, and it wasn't boss attempts. The bosses in DS2 are not nearly as hard as the trash or the invaders or the people that play that straight PvP all the time. There was a PvP event going in DS2, an unofficial community event going on when I started playing that. Worst fucking time in the world to start playing it. And I didn't want to cheese it. So I played it online and just, beat some, don't beat some, right? I didn't really have PvP weapons or wasn't thinking PvP when I was playing that game. So if I could hit somebody, I hit them like a fucking truck, but I was using a spear most of the time, and a spear is not good for PvP. It's got good reach, but just you have to be accurate with it. But DS3, I went Super Chad strength build. I'm using the Fuma Ultra Great Sword a lot. And I'm using a Great Cleaver a lot. And I'm using, what is the other weapon I'm using a lot of? Those are the two main ones, like, that are in heavy rotation right now. I go back and forth between the two. And I want to say there's another weapon, but I guess it doesn't matter because I'm not thinking of it. I was using the regular butcher's knife a lot early game. But this fucking cleaver, oh, I'm using Yorm's Great Axe, which is awesome. It looks like a huge fucking razor. But anyways, my guy is tanky as fuck. Just things that one-shot other people, like, piss me off, and that's about it. It's the start of using weapon arts that continued into Elden Ring, right? So you have the weapon arts in DS3. You don't have them in the other Dark Souls games. It's got its own separate mana bar, which, you know, in DS2, you just had so many spells you could use, and you would get extra copies of it and add it to your spell rotation to get more uses of the spell. It just used your stamina to shoot. And in DS3, you have a mana bar, which is what you use for your weapon arts, or you use for spells. And for me, I use a weapon art, and then I also have barely enough pyromancy to coat my sword in flame. But both my swords hit like trucks. The Ultra Great Sword, like, I just don't even shield up. It's just two-handed. It has an 80% block all by itself. It just uses a truckload of stamina. But it looks awesome fired up. That game has aged quite well. It looks pretty close to Elden Ring. Elden Ring just a tiny bit prettier than DS3. DS3 looks really good in 4K. Fire effects look great. The environment looks great. It does not have a lot of muddy textures. It is a very good-looking game still in 2024. And I know that game released 8 years ago, but it looks fantastic still. And it still plays fantastic. Like, after playing 3, and I'm mostly done with 3, right? I can't remember how many more bosses I got for Ring City. But I only have the final boss in Dark Souls 3. That's where I stopped at the final boss because I forgot about the DLC. And then went through the DLC to start beating that stuff first before I hit the final boss. But as soon as I'm done with Ring City, I hit the final boss and I'm done with that. And I can start back to Elden Ring and start my Dex build. Which I think is what you're doing right now, Rusty. You've just got the bug because I was playing that much Souls, or what?
I started playing Elden Ring and I'm going backwards. I started playing as a, you know, with X build. Because I played Elden Ring, you know, when it first came out. And yeah, I did the old magic build, you know?
Cheese build.
It was very, very, very cheese. Oh my god. And I just lost 70 fucking thousand runes. Anyway,
You went Dex build though this time, right?
I did for the first half. I was gonna do Dex Faith or Dex. So did Dex Arcane, and then Dex Faith. And Dex Faith didn't make any sense.
No, so, it doesn't really line up very well.
So I went. I said, you know what? I want to go Oonga Boonga. I looked at my inventory and I said, let me try all these things on. I want to try the biggest sword I have. So I went from using the Bloodhound Blade, which is a curved greatsword.
I've used that before. You know,
medium. It's got a medium attack speed, basically. It's just like, you know, it's kind of like curved swords, only it's kind of got some chunk to it, right? I switched that all up and I said, you know what? I'm going to go greatsword. Just colossal greatsword. It's
pretty fun.
Straight up greatsword.
It's a little bit faster than Monster Hunter, I'll tell you that much.
So, and by a little bit faster, I'm like, Yeah, it is only just a tiny bit faster than the freaking the great sword for Monster Hunter. It took me some time to get used to it too, but it stops shit in its tracks. I mean, you're throwing a fucking, like, you know, railroad, like an entire railroad fucking steel. You just throw, using a fucking steel trunk of a fucking tree, and you're beating shit with it. It is amazing. So I went full, changed up because I couldn't, you know, I couldn't beat some bosses. Like, I couldn't get the damage out that I needed. So I instead of going with anything that was like a named weapon or any boss drop or anything like that, this is a fucking weapon that you can pick up about, you know, I'd say just starting into the game, if you just get on your horse and just run towards it.
It's that guy's in a little area on a hill, right?
What, the greatsword?
Yeah, the greatsword drops off, not an invader, but like a little mini boss event. The guy's not easy.
No, the greatsword is actually in a chest.
Oh, is it in a chest?
Yep. It is in a chest I want to say it was, it's in a chest in Kaelin, I think it is. If it's not in Kaelin, it's, you know, just south of the dragon area at the top. But yeah, it's in a chest. It's guarded by two big dogs. If you run, you can grab it, and it is LeChunk. It's the Buster Sword, basically. It's fucking amazing. But it, I mean, it has nothing special about it, like nothing at all. I am using the Weapon Art Lion's Claw, which basically has you do a fucking somersault and a downward slam with the sword. It does so much poise damage that, you know, I'm staggering bosses left and right. It's so nice. And of course, because the moveset, the L1 moveset for the greatsword, is basically just a bunch of horizontal slashes. It's great for trash because of that. But because it doesn't have a lot of ups, you know, you've run into problems with dragons, or anything that's taller than you. So you use the Lion's Claw for the, for that somersault, you get a little bit of airtime. You get hyper armor while you're in it, so you can't get knocked out of it. And, you know, it's a massive fucking slam. It takes, like, a sizable chunk off of the fucking boss. If you do it twice in a row, two or three times in a row, you get an instant stagger. And that's nuts. That's just nuts, because you can punish the shit out of a boss with stagger. So I have been enjoying this playstyle. And of course, once you get the mimic tier, you've got two Ungabungas going at the same time and twice as much stagger going. It's way fucking easier than my mage playthrough by a far.
So you went straight Chad build.
I went straight Chad. Like, most people do, like, the double hammers as, like, the, you know, the very Ungabunga. This is just me swinging a fucking Buster Sword. I'm basically, you know, yeah, I'm just having fun with this. This particular moveset just happens to be right up my alley. I did want to change and do, like, Blasphemous Blade, or, you know, I wanted to have a strength faith build, but this is just too much fun. Like, I'm having way more fun than I would, you know, trying to weave spells into this bullshit. I go in there and I just put my forehead down and go, "You die now." And that's the fun that I'm having with this shit right now. But I've got my Dark Souls pace now. Like this, you know, when you first start up into Dark Souls, or at least for me, into a Souls-like game, you just get your shit kicked in for like the first hour or so, and then you realize, oh yeah, this is a much slower, methodical, fucking think about it, you know, before you do it kind of game. And this is not a button masher. This is, you know, you've got to like, you've got to time shit properly. As soon as I got my Dark Souls legs underneath me, I started flying through this fucking game. Like, I am... Oh, let me see if I can actually find my save file information. Let's see. Hours. And I'm through the majority of the game right now. My first playthrough was much, much slower at like 120 hours or some bullshit. So I do have the benefit of kind of knowing where the fuck I'm going, which definitely helps in this game. But it has been a minute, and I have slept since I beat it last. So there has been some moments where I'm like, where the fuck do I go next? Or what do I need to do to do this? But, and it would have been faster if I had chosen to do any, rune farms. I've decided not to do any rune farms. So I am currently level 116 and I have not farmed one rune. Like, I haven't gone and specifically, like, killed the Albanerics at fucking the, you know, at the Palace of Blood or anything like that. I've done none of that shit. You know, so it's all been very organic, and the pacing has been just right. For this playthrough, since one of the reasons why I liked Elden Ring, when I played it last, is that it just felt right. Like, everything was paced correctly. Like, if you didn't fuck up nearly as much as you think, and you lost a bunch of fucking runes,
you could actually, like,
plow through this game. And if you have if you kind of focus on a build and just go with it and get good with the moveset, you're just gonna fucking dominate. But once I get done with Elden Ring, I picked up the remastered version of Dark Souls. I have never beaten Dark Souls, and I have, and my experience with Dark Souls 3 was turning it on, getting out of the first area, and dying to the very first enemies over and over and over again, and just, turning it off. I said nope, and fucking, like, returned it. So, hopefully I have a better experience with this now that I've kind of got an idea of how the games play, and what's, the mindset is to, like, not be pissed off at it. I've matured. I can actually, like, understand these games a bit more now. So I can appreciate them. So I'm going to give him a try. That's on top of the Elden Ring DLC. That's on top of Hades 2 that I purchased but haven't played yet. That's on top of The Final Fantasy 14 7.0 fucking release is the new expansion that's going to come up here in the next, you know, month or two. On top of Wi-Fiing the woods and pasties. I have a lot of shit to do. Man, I'm, my cup runneth over.
I feel it's, that comment. What is the name of that game that I started? Shit.
I saw you pop onto it today.
I can't log into Steam while I'm on this PC. You'll have to find it for me.
I'll check for you.
Anyways, I'm playing this game that's a love letter to Half-Life. And what it is it's in like Half-Life 1 graphics with some clean lines, I guess, is the best way to describe it. But anyways,
Abiotic factor,
right. It's an odd name. So anyways, what it is you're a scientist in the desert, right? You drive up to a facility, you go underground. Chaos ensues, interdimensional portals are opened, and you're all by yourself, basically. And you encounter some NPCs that have had horrible things happen to them, and you are set to survive. It's a narrative-driven story. It's in early access right now, but it's kind of driving you between different checkpoints. But the time it takes you to get from checkpoint to checkpoint in the story is kind of up to you. What it does is the base is powered during the day, and about 9 o'clock p.m., the power shuts off. So the power is always cycling. So you have things that run on power, but like all the lights shut off. And the only thing you got is your flashlight, basically, or little flares that you can make. And as you gather materials from the environment, you start to unlock ideas for recipes. And then the idea for the recipe, you go through and like play this little like game that kind of shows you an icon with a border on it that represents like organic or a simple material, etc. And you put those icons together and then you form a new crafting recipe. So right now I have a spear that is like a kitchen knife taped to a lamp, right? Just like I combined a lamp with a kitchen knife and duct tape, and now I have a spear. I have several cafeteria trays taped together for a shield. It feels very like MDK 2. I don't know if anybody here remembers MDK, but like the weird crafting recipes of MDK, because that, you know, was a long time ago, like Sega in the 90s, Murder, Death, Kill 2.
Wow.
But anyways, kind of has a mix of that flavor plus Half-Life 1, right? Like you're in this facility, you're like breaking apart crates and computers and stuff like that to grab power supplies and circuit boards and things like that. You've got these interdimensional aliens running about, and I'm fortifying my base area right now with traps and barricades and things like that to keep those things out so I can sleep. But you have all the basic – you have more than the basic needs. You have your hunger, your thirst, and any kind of secondary negative characteristics like radiation or bleeding, which you have to heal immediately. Right. You got breaks and other things that can happen to your health. And then you have your restroom eater. You have to take a shit. And yeah, there's a little mini game for taking a shit to get it out faster.
I play that mini game every day.
So you have to go to a toilet every now and then. If you've eaten enough calories. But you got like little vending machines, and you can see in the vending machine how many items it has and what items you can buy. If you scavenge money, you can use that money to get the item out of the vending machine. Those don't respawn. None of the stuff actually respawns except for the enemies. When you kill the enemies, they drop alien meat, and you can use that meat to make food, which is what I've been doing. You have... It picks up a little bit from Project Zomboid. So Project Zomboid had a – you create a character, And then you have like positive traits and negative traits. And you have so many points when you create your character, right? And so you can pick negative traits to give yourself more points for positive traits, right? My character is exceptionally thirsty all the time. So I don't know if that was a good trait to pick because the water supply is pretty limited. I am currently finding like water, what do you call those things? Like not a water stand. But like, you know, in an office setting, sometimes they'll have like
cooler.
A water cooler. Yeah. So like there's water coolers and you can use the water coolers to refill your little bottle that I have and also drink out of them. And some of the sinks have water in it, so you can drain that. You cannot grab the toilet water and boil it like you can in other games. So just kind of surviving. The bigger enemies like eat my fucking lunch. So I'm learning to sneak past them and use things to lure them away. I don't know. It's like so far it's been pretty fun. I'll have to give a full review later when I've got more time into it, but it's in early access and it seems pretty worth it. I got, logged into my Green Man Gaming account and got it for $19.99.
Nice.
So, which, you know, usually I'll see a game we're like, does Green Man have it? Steam key? No, look there. The only problem with Green Man is you don't get a refund if you use Green Man. But I wanted to save a few dollars. I think it normally retails for about $24. So I got $5 off at Green Man. Should get them as a sponsor. Like, I use Green Man a fair amount. Like, I bought Helldivers on there too. I bought Dragon's Dogma 2 on there as well. But Abiotic Factor is a very indie game. Again, a lot of nods to Half-Life 1, even like the area, like something I noticed it was minor is like when you go into a new area, the title card for that will flash on the left of the screen, which is very reminiscent of Half-Life. Don't ask me why that I remember that. I just do. Some of the sound effects, some of the scientists just kind of give me Half-Life vibes. A lot of the, like, there's still people surviving. Like, I went into a closet and there's a janitor hiding in the closet with a whole bunch of red staplers.
That's awesome.
So, like, there's people surviving and they kind of give you pointers as to what you need to do next in order to escape. But, like, that's basically what you're trying to do is you're trying to what I gather is I'm trying to contain the anomaly. And trying to escape. There's no zombies, though. Like, it's a survival game with no zombies, with aliens and a weird SCP kind of story going for it, right? Enemies aren't particularly scary. They're kind of goofy looking and fun. It's pretty lighthearted in its approach, though it is pretty grisly at times. I like it so far. It's got some, like, indie jank to it, but, like, it's pretty forgivable. Like, there's a lot of survival crafting games out there. I do not think hardly any of them are good. I don't know if this is going to be as good as 7 Days to Die, but like for $19.99, I think it's fine. Speaking of 7 Days to Die, 1.0 also comes out next month. The game's been in development for like 15 years. Has it been 13 years? Because it came out in like 2011, like year one of us doing this podcast.
Pretty much. That's how we've all figured out that I was a camp mom.
I think it's significantly improved. It works great in single player as well as multiplayer. They're going to finish the story out next year from looking at the roadmap, and have more human factions. But like the way that game plays now is you have to go out and scavenge to find recipes, and the recipes are like how you progress. Like you can put individual points in things, but some of those points are locked out by getting certain recipes, which means that you need to spend at least every 2 days, you need to have at least gone out once. And if you overcraft in an area, then you screw yourself. And I think this has been true. Like you could build a castle defense, I think, in this. But the more efficient way to play this version of the game, and I haven't played, you know, obviously 1.0 is not out yet, so I don't know if this still will hold true in a month. But the optimal way to play this game right now is to find an attic and knock out the stairs or whatever, you know, ladder or whatever to get up there. And find a good way of getting up and down and post up there on nights that are not horde night and then build a, you know, a horde base. that's like, you know, two squares wide and is a ramp of death, and then you got to kill fucking everything, which is actually a little bit more action-packed. Like, I was playing it a few months ago. I remember going through almost all of my ammo by, like, day 14 and then having to find an alternative way using some traps and things like that for the following day 21 night. But it wants you to do a little bit more action gameplay than it did before, and it's a little bit more RPG-based, right? Like, you get money. Like, the trader's essential. You need the money from doing his quest to buy other items or unlock recipes or sometimes just give you an item that you need. Or, you know, like a crafting item that you need, like gasoline or something, just to get you started into a tech level. And you need to get transportation, right? Like, getting a bike as early as possible is like key for 7 days to die right now. So you can get from all the different areas and also run from things because the bike's pretty fast. But, you know, later on, getting a gyrocopter or getting a Jeep or something like that would be also pretty key. But that game's come a long, long ways in 13 years. A lot of haters out there. I think it's like the premium survival experience with the right amount of action plus RPG elements plus crafting in a game. Like, I think it just balances all that out really well.
I don't know. I kind of I miss the old days.
You miss turtle gaming. You can turtle game in Abiotic Vector. Like, it is set up in such a way that you can have like specific roles, and you gain levels based on what you do, Oblivion style, right? So if you're doing a lot of cooking, then you get cooking XP. Like, currently I'm looking for a refrigerator because my food is going bad faster than I want it to. Like, all my meat's spoiling and I'm recycling it for biological components. But you could totally just be the, you know, guard the base and cook all the meat from all the things that I kill. Just fine. It's a pretty interesting game, but it seems to be playing just as well solo if I could ever figure out a more efficient way of dealing with the heavier enemies. Like, I'm not sure what the penalty for death in this is. In 7 days to die, it reduces your overall health, kind of like Dark Souls, until you build up your healthiness through eating good food. But, like, every time you die in 7 days to die, it reduces your maximum health because, I don't know. In this, there doesn't seem to be any penalty other than dropping items that weren't in your hotbar. So if it was in your hotbar, right, or on your person, you keep those items. Anything you scavenged is you need to go get. Which typically isn't that hard. Like, I've died a few times just trying different things, and it wasn't that big of a deal.
I don't know, man. That's sounds like survival Half-Life, and it could be fun.
I'd say if anybody's interested, just watch a stream. Like, it's kind of what I did. I saw the trailer and I was like, why is this appealing to me? It might have been Splattercat that was playing it. Splattercat's great for all those weird ass games.
Possibly. Yeah.
But yeah, Abiotic Vector, not bad. But, you know, initial impressions is like, I don't know, I probably only have like 2 or 3 hours in it right now.
Yeah, I just thought you start it today. I don't know. I don't think that I'm in the mood for survival at this point.
Yeah, it was Splattercat. I just typed in Splattercat Abiotic Factor.
Nice.
I like, I'll be honest with you, like, there's a few streamers. I follow a few, like, old school. I'd say they're probably old school at this point. Splattercat's one of them, and then Fightin' Cowboy's the other one. For all your Souls-like needs, Fightin' Cowboy is the guy. And for all of your weird indie games, like, Splattercat's your other guy. And then for all of your very honest reviews, it's ACG Gaming. Like, that. Those are the three YouTubers that I follow.
I don't follow too many YouTubers. Specifically for, you know, for games. ACG's been pretty good. I started watching him just because he was doing shit that other people weren't doing, like, you know, commenting on, you know, sound and voice and, you know, graphic settings, especially during like the GPU shortage. He was trying to, trying to game out at different settings just so that people can actually like use their, you know, get an idea that if their rig was still usable for that kind of game and what kind of settings to be, you know, looking for and what it's going to look like. You know, that was key. Is, can I play the game, but it looks like a potato?
Right.
He'd be able to answer that for you. So, yeah, outside of that, I guess I don't watch a whole lot of other YouTubers for, you know, specific shit. Unless it's like a one-off game and it's like the only YouTuber that does, you know, does that game, you know? I wouldn't be able to tell you any names, though. Anywho,
Jason, you've been playing a lot of,
I've been playing the shit out of Slay the Spire.
How many times have you beat it at this point?
Well, I only beat it with, like, beat it with two characters, when I played it on Game Pass, almost 2 years ago now.
You know, that Slay the Spire 2 comes out next year.
Nice. So far, just in this week, and I've only had chance to play like three nights this week, this being the third. I've already worked my runs up to beat it with the green character.
The green character. Kind
of, that's the knife thrower.
Yeah,
The rogue.
Right.
And I switched to that one immediately just because once they were unlocked, because that's the easiest one to do a complete run with the first time, and kind of get shit unlocked. So now that that's done, which I just did as we were starting the podcast. And as we're recording the podcast, I'm sitting here doing a new run with the warrior and blowing shit away. But the warrior's hard because strategizing out damage reduction with that character is a lot harder than with some of the others. So it's been fucking interesting, but I definitely love having it on the Switch. Picked it up on sale, like I said, for $7, and it is the game doesn't demand much, so it runs great on the Switch, and it will run for a long time on a single charge on the Switch, which is great.
Yeah, it's super light. Not that I would ever admit to playing games at work. it does play very light on, you know, on side machines. Yeah.
On what?
On side machines, you know, games, systems that don't necessarily have like the beefiest GPU.
Well, yeah, because it can basically run on anything with a APU on it, right? Like, or integrated graphics.
Yeah, pretty much. It's not. It's basically all sprite based, so it's all. It's pretty good.
And I mean, I just love the game because of the. It, there's not a ton of variance to the runs. Like, you can kind of learn for the most part, you know, which paths to take, but the game will, you know, surprise you sometimes. Like, for the most part, what the game really changes up is boss rooms, not necessarily regular rooms, right? So it's just a great game to play, even if you've beaten it all the way through multiple times. It's still, there's enough variance in the runs, strategy wise, that it stays fun. So yeah, if you've never played it before or picked it up yet, or even if you have Game Pass and you just never installed it in the, what, almost 3 years it's been out? 4 years?
It's been a minute. It has been a minute. It's worth it, though. It's worth it.
It will basically run on anything. I'd actually be surprised if there's not a mobile version. I wonder now.
What the fuck is that? I just got an item and I don't know what it's for.
Oh. There is a mobile version of it.
Oh, yeah. Sweet. So I can play it on my phone?
Yeah, you can fucking play it on your phone. It's $7, but you can play it on your phone.
What is it, Apple Store? What is it? Slay the Spire. Oh, yeah. $7. That's not bad. Well, I'm looking forward to the new one when it comes out. Card battlers. Card battlers are always solid games. They all have a unique spin, but I guess that might be my background playing Magic the Gathering.
Yeah. And I mean it's like $8.25 on Steam Store at this point. You can Nintendo just still has it for like $20 because, Nintendo never lowers their prices over time, right?
So Nintendo does the Nintendo thing. Any hoobles.
But yeah, Slay the Spire 2 though next year.
Alrighty, do we want to take a break?
I think we should take a break.
Alrighty, we'll be back.
And we're back.
Woot! This is a really
wow.
You got me like looking at like TikToks and shit during break, and I saw this jump, and I'm losing my shit over it right now. I don't normally watch BMX style like jumps, but this is a fucking sick ass trick.
Yeah, it is. So real talk about that stuff, for whatever reason, like it's incredibly addictive to just get stuck in reels. And yes. I find myself wasting time with it sometimes. I'm like, fuck, I got off work and what did I do for an hour? I looked at fucking 30-second reels for an hour.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I'll just like stop and put my phone down and turn it on silent and then forget when my and then forget that my girlfriend called me. But
rip,
you know, she forgives me. She knows why I'm doing it. But yeah, like I'll get stuck watching reels, and it's like I could have been playing a game, or I could have done this thing around the house, or you know, I could have got my laundry done, I could have eaten dinner, or whatever. I could have walked the dog on lunch, and I just got stuck in a reel loop. But I do get some like quality shit. I send you guys the most dark fucking shit ever. stuff that I cannot talk about on this show. I find some dark ass shit. I don't, you know, I think just the older you get, like you've just kind of seen it all. And like just Jim Carrey doesn't make you laugh anymore. And no. So like the fun, silly humor, like you've just seen, you know, different iterations of it over and over again. And the only thing that is, that like makes me laugh anymore is stuff that really catches me off guard. And so that's the shit that I end up watching. But I do find some pretty good quality memes. I do. Speaking of memeability, so has everybody seen on social media the picture of King George?
Yes. Yes, I have. Oh, my God.
It looks like something from like Dark Souls 3.
I would
hang it up on my wall. It looks like what's his name from fucking Ghostbusters?
Yeah, it's the fucking from Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah, the painting.
Fucking, Vigo. What's his
name? Vigo.
Vigo, yes.
Yeah, they paint his, like, if you've just been under a rock. So basically, it's his face is pretty photorealistic, and then he's just, like, washed in a cloud of red morass. It looks really sinister fuck. It looks cool as shit, but, like, painting a world leader, if you can call the king a world leader anymore. Anyways, you don't want to get shot. they're figureheads. Like, they know they're figureheads, right? But, like, painting somebody with that much prominence, right? The king of England, and then you paint him, like, Dark Souls 3 style, or, like, Vigo from Ghostbusters 2. Like, what was that guy thinking? Like, it's so bad. It's such poor taste. Like, even, so, there's a local museum here called the Philbrook that grabbed some pretty high art, right? And they were even memeing it, and they said something to the effect of, like, the public hated the portrait of the king so bad that we have it on loan if you want to see it. Like, they were even trolling on it, like, as it being, like, in poor taste. And for that, it is in poor taste. Like, it's a very distinct style. Like, nobody's going to forget that. But for all the wrong reasons. Like, I would hang it up because I hang tacky-ass weird shit in my house. But
it does. It kind of looks like a fucking finger painting.
It's actually, like, really high detail. It's just...
It's very high detail. But, I mean, from...
It's so dark.
From afar, it's not... It's not centered. There's a weird butterfly hanging out over his fucking right shoulder. And
King Charles,
you don't do red on red. It just looks like a floating head with a ghostly fucking like uniform underneath it. He's like,
have you seen this, Jason?
It's the artist was like, I've got earth tones for, you know, for his face. I got plenty of silver for his hair. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Click that link, Jason. I've got
red and brown. I forgot to buy blue and yellow. I forgot to buy all the other colors. What am I going to do with the background? Ah, fuck it. And it's just like finger paints the rest of it. That's red and black. We're going full fucking Sith here.
Oh, God.
Oh, God is right, dude.
What the?
It's
7.5 feet by 5 foot. It's 7.5 feet by 5.5 feet.
So, excuse the pun, but what in the bloody hell did they think they were doing?
Well, it's red on red.
It really looks like Dark Souls art.
It kind of does.
It's
I don't know what the deal with what's the butterfly.
So King Charles III is actually Viggo the Carpathian, and he's just been biding his time.
There's a lot of memes about that.
This
Jesus.
One commenter on the royal family's official Instagram feed remarked that it looked as though the king was burning in hell, while another said it would give the impression that he's got a lot of blood on his hands. Jesus. That's
to
nuts,
me, it looks like a metal album cover.
It does.
This one's great. This one says, it's like Tampax the Third.
Yes. Oh,
Jesus.
See, like, already memes going around. There's a
yes.
There is the death metal album cover. Somebody put the death logo on the side.
Oh, nice! Awesome! Perfect.
It's a pretty crazy portrait.
It's just nuts, man. Like, I don't. Did he actually like it?
I don't know. Who knows what he likes?
I mean,
dude, he's old as fuck.
He really is. But it's just
everything he says has got to be curated. I mean, he can say he quote unquote can say whatever.
Butterfly was his idea.
Okay.
Well,
that isn't really gaming news, but it is just relevant to what's going on right now.
I mean, it's pop culture-y because it is, you know, King Viggo the fucking third.
King Viggo.
Oh man. This is life imitating art.
Yeah, it's the exact opposite, right?
That's nuts. All right. Wow. That's crazy. I saw it once, like it popped up on a news feed and I'm like, okay, there was an immediate comparison to Viggo. And then like normally you see a portrait with like, you know, basically on the throne, right? You know, not like on the shitter, but on the throne.
Right.
Whatever. I don't know, man. I hope he's happy with it.
Well, in more gaming-centric news, Microsoft is looking to... There's a rumor. I am going to report on this rumor because I think there might be some substance behind it. But Call of Duty Black Ops 6 is rumored to come to Game Pass, and with it would be some tier changes. So as it stands right now, if you have Game Pass for PC only, it's $9.99, and for Xbox only, it's $9.99. For both, it's $16.99, and I have it. That's Ultimate, which also gives you access to the mobile, which honestly, I should move it back down to $9.99 because I'm not using the mobile at all, or my Xbox. My Xbox is actually dead. But if that happens, right, like, that would take sales away from Call of Duty, so they probably have to change tier systems in order to get access to that game. And I don't really give to a flying fuck about Call of Duty. Jason might, but as long as I have access to the games that I like on there, that would be fine. I guess you guys may or may not remember, but Redfall was a thing this time last year.
Oh, yes.
For a short moment, and then...
For a very brief moment.
Yeah. Anyways, Arcane Austin was the studio that got closed that was responsible for Redfall's development. And I think there was a lot of things that happened with that studio, right? Like they made a game that they've never really made before, right? Like Dishonored is a good game, right? But they've never like forayed into multiplayer titles or live service games, right? It's always been single player narrative games, which Arcane does pretty good at. Like Prey 2 is amazing too, right? They're gonna do a final update to Redfall. and a single player pausing system in offline mode, if you're interested at all, which I don't think you should be because it's a trash game. But they're doing a single update and then they're done. I don't think it's worth, I mean, it's on Game Pass, right? It
could have been a better game, but.
Yeah, it's on Game Pass. I never installed it because it was so broken for so long.
I also say a lot of people are looking forward to GTA 6. It's set to be released in fall of 2025. So we've got a year and a half before it comes out. They've just said that they on GTA 5, they just passed $200 million made on that. So I think they did fine with 5. They've been releasing, like trickle releasing, a lot of content for the multiplayer on that people apparently still play. But that's has some other things, but I don't want to dominate here. Jason, did you have a couple of stories?
I did. So we've got the announcement this week that Ubisoft has canceled The Division Heartland.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah.
Heartland was an okay game.
During the earnings call this week, they said that it was in a part of their efforts to streamline operations and adapt to evolving market trends.
Oh, bullshit. The adapting to market trends. Just come out and fucking say it.
Basically, what they've decided to do was shut Heartland down and redeploy everybody who was working on Heartland to X-Defiant and Rainbow Six. Apparently, they don't believe there's much remaining interest in a free-to-play spinoff of The Division.
I don't. You know what? Ubi just do Ubi.
Ubi be Ubi.
It but really
Ubi hasn't reinvented anything in a decade. Like, in my mind, like, we were talking a little bit about this. Like, Assassin's Creed, like, went way off the rails with its story. There's been a couple of times it's been good. Like, the one set in Egypt was pretty cool, and it went off the rails to fight gods, and Valhalla was pretty decent. And before that, it was basically three, in my mind, was the last good game. Black Flag was okay, but it was – you were whatever the, you know, the Illuminati is. Like, you were a character playing a video game, basically. In 5, like, Black Flag's all right, but it's nothing. I know people have some fond memories of it, but like 3 was kind of where the story stopped being good, basically. But the most recent one I played, I think it's called it's not Origins, but whatever it is, the one that's set in Mesopotamia. It's like stupid.
That's Origins.
It's like, yeah, it's baby mode easy. Like, there's just zero challenge to that game. Like, in a few hours, I dropped off. I'm glad I got it for $19.99. Valhalla was a little bit too bloated. I put 100 hours into it, and I was like, okay, damn, I'm done. Like, seriously, I've been doing fetch quests for hours and hours and hours. I just want to get through the game, and then I just dropped off and never went back. Like, some of them have been good, but, like, they have not – with that crazy release schedule of just release game after game after game after game after game after game, like, who knows what the quality of the next one's going to be. Like, it could be okay, right? Or it'd just be another bland-ass Assassin's Creed game. And that's just what I've come to expect. Same thing with Far Cry. Like, the last good one was in my mind was the one that – what was the one you're in Montana where you had the dog? You're fighting against the cult. We all played it.
That's 5, ain't it?
Yeah, I think it's 5. I like that one quite a bit. But hot damn, that hasn't been but like 6 or 7 years ago probably at this point.
I tried to play it again.
I tried to play a couple Fallouts.
Or you mean Far Cry?
Or Far Cry. So yeah. Yeah, Far Cry's. And I just couldn't get into them anymore. Like,
yeah, that came out in 2018. It's 2024, 6 years ago.
Yeah. And I just can't get into them anymore. There's just nothing for me there. when it comes down to, you know, down to it, I just didn't want to fucking play another Ubi game.
They just become so, like, here's the crazy thing about Assassin's Creed, right? Got 1, 2, Brotherhood, Revelations, 3, Black Flag, Rogue, Unity, Syndicate, Origins, Odyssey, Valhalla, Mirage, and Shadows. Right? Like, that's a lot of fucking games. Mirage is the one that I played. And Mirage was just trash. And out of all those games, like, what is it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Shadows is to be released. 13 games, right? Like, one's pretty kind of bare bones. Two's exceptionally good. Brotherhood was exceptionally good. Revelations was not bad compared to the others. 3 was okay at best. That was the one you're in America, right?
Yeah.
Black Flag was decent. Unity was trash. Syndicate was okay. Origins was uniquely good. Odyssey was bloated as fuck. Valhalla was good until it got too bloated. Like, it's easily the longest one. Mirage is trash. Like, their track record is basically of, like, great games. 2, which came out, like, 20 years, not 20 years ago, but it feels like 20 years ago, right? 2 and Brotherhood, which came out more than a decade ago, of being, like, top tier. And Origin being, like, pretty good. And Valhalla being pretty good. To Mirage being, like, utter trash, right? And then everything in between just being another release game on a schedule to be released every fucking year. Yeah, Assassin's Creed 2 came out in 2009. That was 15 years ago. Brotherhood came out in 2010, 14 years ago, right? Just, they've got such big dev teams. Like, I wonder, like, how they've kept any kind of consistency with this many people working on a game. And Ubi just does the same fucking tower thing, right? Like, it's just always the same thing over and over and over and over again.
Yep.
So, Ubisoft, it's like almost always on a sale that I'm going to get anything Ubisoft, and if I got nothing else to play. And if anything, teaching has taught me about going back to really good games. Like, I haven't played anything since Elden Ring that's as good as Dark Souls 1, 2, and 3, just being honest. And before Elden Ring, it was Dark Souls 3. So, like, those are really good games. You can compare them against each other, but, like, the best games to come out before Elden Ring weren't as good as Dark Souls 2, in my opinion, for that genre. Or just a game that's a video game-ass video game that has really good mechanics and a lot of replayability. Or just, like, playing Fallout New Vegas recently, right? Like, the quest system in that is so robust. The interactions and the way things play off each other is just so robust. And that game came out, like, 14 years ago. And they just... Fallout hasn't done anything as good as that since. There hasn't been a lot of RPGs that have done anything that good since. Like, it is super RP. And I think with... them having the release window on New Vegas was like 18 months. They had 18 months to craft that game. They took the engine for 3, updated the visuals just a little bit, and then focused really hard on plot points and story, which is what Obsidian just like fucking excels at and just knocked it out of the park, sans a fuckload of bugs. So I don't know. I don't know what the state of video games is right now. Maybe we're just too, at a point in our lives where we're old enough to see through some of the cracks, but I don't think that's totally the case. Like, the quality of games, for the most part, has kind of gone down over the last decade, for the most part. Definitely been some things that really stand out, but the great deluge of trash video games is just like, it's been an avalanche that's just been going on for a decade.
It really has. There's some gems, like you said. Some games just stand out.
The major developers are just like shoveling shit at us.
Yes, and that's why we've spent a lot of time actually, you know, just as a group playing a lot of indies, because indies are like a breath of fresh air. They're the ones that are, you know, developing new ideas. Now, there's a lot of copycat bullshit that happens. Like, I mean, Vampire Survivors, good game. And then it just, you know, and then there was Survivor Likes that popped up everywhere.
There's been a couple that are pretty good, though.
I mean, yeah, some of them, you know, take that, do their own spin, and, you know, add to it. Great. You know, it's not that the original does it, you know, best. It's the original starts the trend. I mean, that's why we have Souls likes and, you know, Metroidvanias and shit like that, right? You know, it's like you have a game that defines, defines that kind of genre. Well,
the thing
really is, hasn't been any new genres.
The closest of good Souls likes. What was the Pinocchio game I was playing last year?
Lies of P.
Lies of P is excellent. Not as much customization. They focus purely on gameplay mechanics for that. Lies of P is the closest you'll get to a Bloodborne 2. It's really good. It's also fairly hard for a while until you get really used to the parry system. But it intentionally borrows some things from Souls and other things it does not. Like, you just can't, the iframes are pretty small. Souls is notorious for like being able to get your iframes up to a ridiculous degree. Lies of P is like, no, you can't roll all that. You can run away with some of the big attacks, which is what you have to do to run to the other side of the boss. But you got a hit coming. They telegraph it. You better parry it or you're going to get two shot here. So Lies of P is a good adaptation. And Neo 1, I think, was a good adaptation. Neo 2 feels a little bit bloated. The Surge is pretty good. Though I've never finished Surge 2. I might get through that if I get Elden Ring to the spot that I want before the DLC. But that's why we're going back and playing these old games. Again, you know, the Fallout TV show, like me and Jason have like went crazy with Fallout and modded the fuck out of it. Speaking of that, did your game break with the, or is you still set to not auto update, Jason?
I have kept Steam offline anytime I go launch Fallout to keep it from updating.
Yeah, they released yet another update that broke mods again. So if you are playing Fallout 4, it is broken as fuck if you're playing it online at all.
Yeah. I'm staying the fuck away from all that. Like, I had my fun with Fallout. But it's I wanted something different. Like, I'm finding a weird comfy spot with Elden Ring.
It's a game you can like, the music is fantastic, don't get me wrong, but it is a game that you can turn down a little bit and listen to a podcast and just go grind souls or grind an area and figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many different, like, the one thing that Elden Ring gets better than the other games is there's a lot of mini challenges, right, with a lot of rewards. So you can go through and like clear these little dungeons to get additional rewards, right, or go farm some enemies for, you know, your shards or whatever the fuck you used to upgrade in that game. I forgot already, but runes. You can runes, right, not the runes, the for your equipment.
Smithing stones.
Yeah, smithing stones. Like, it borrows a lot of mechanics from Souls. Like, it's very much a spiritual successor to Souls. And, you know, the go-anywhere-ness of that game is pretty fucking good, too. The thing I do like a little bit better about Souls, and if you do get into it finally, Rusty, you'll notice this. Like, it is pretty measured in where you go next. For the most part, one is not. Like, it's good to look at a progression guide for one just to figure out where you go. But everything interconnects, like everything shortcuts back to bonfires. Like in one, you literally can run from the bottom, from the Firelink Shrine is in the middle of the map. You can run all the way to the bottom in about, if you could avoid everything in like 20 minutes, and you can run all the way to the top in like 20 or 30 minutes. but it's a big vertical map that just all interconnects with varying paths down and up, which is pretty crazy. And two is not like that. Two is literally you go to an, it's a spoke. You start in the middle of the map and you go into a door through a tunnel, and then it takes you to a new area, and that new area goes out and branches out. But you can initially warp from any bonfire that you discover. And then three gives you the ability to warp from any bonfire, but everything interconnects again, which is fucking nice. But three, I'm trying to remember, how does three start? Where is the... Oh, so three has a Firelink Shrine. The way that one starts... So, just quick... It's not a spoiler, but I think it's a good PSA. When you start three and you get your first bonfire in the Firelink Shrine, which is an area very reminiscent to the area in Demon Souls, you warp from there to your first place. And then from there, the way it continues to progress is you get carried by these fucking, like, demon ghouls, carry you to different areas of the city. Like, as you conquer an area, they, like, fly you away to the next area in a lot of spots, which is weird. But, yeah. Okay. But you have to level up at the main bonfire the Firelink Shrine, which two, I think you can... Two also levels up with a person. One you can level up at any bonfire, because you don't have to talk to a firekeeper to level up, which is nice. Firekeeper just updates to your Estus, I think, in one. Anyways, yeah, we've been going back to these old games because these old games are really fucking good, and there just hasn't been a lot of games that really compare. And we are definitely in a lull. Like, both me and Rusty played Dragon's Dogma pretty fucking quick. Or we absorbed it pretty fucking quick. I wouldn't say 80 hours plus is pretty fucking quick, but still. Like, we got through it, and there wasn't a lot of reason to go back to it.
No.
It's good.
Really didn't have.
It's a good, solid game. I don't think its roguelike structure works as well as the first one. Dark Arisen's a better DLC. Like, I've been looking at it with rose-colored glasses because it was new Dragon's Dogma, and it was good. But it's still kind of generic, especially compared to Souls.
Right. Very generic. That was my biggest complaint, is like, it's just like,
there's not a lot of variety between itemization. Like, your sword guy always plays like a sword guy with the same move set no matter what, right?
RPG the game, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, we'll be getting some newer games coming. I don't know. I'm kind of looking forward to jumping back into Final Fantasy 14, in the summer. New expansions are always, always great. There's new story, different directions, things to explore for that. I like the story for Final Fantasy 14. I don't necessarily enjoy the MMO mechanics very much. It just pisses me off, but it's, for me, it's a necessary evil to, to experience that story. And they do a damn good job at telling it, through not just speaking it at you, but also like making you feel like a part of it. That's why I keep going back to it. That, and my buddy plays it, so
if you're not a complete exclusive Steam person, Epic Game Store is having a mega sale between May 16th and June 13th right now. One of the Dragon Age Inquisition Game of the Year Edition is up there for free. And it's available between May 16th and May 23rd, which I think you can get on Game Pass, if I'm not wrong. Through the... Was it Origin tie-in?
Yeah, there is a tie-in that you can actually get into, get that game. But, I mean, if you don't have Game Pass, that's another way of getting it, I guess.
Um,
I've been kind of meaning to play Ghost of Tsushima again. I know I talked
on PC.
You know, I mentioned it earlier, but you know, on break. But I there was a PC port for that that I'm kind of interested in. You know, possibly putting on my PC and playing through that. It was a solid game. I love that game.
Speaking of old games, something that depresses the hell out of me. I'm a real big fan of XCOM Rebirth, you know, XCOM 1 and 2. Game director Jake Solomon has sworn off all strategy games after Midnight Suns. He no longer works. What's the name of the Sid Meier company? Whatever the Sid Meier company is.
Oh, Firaxis?
Firaxis, right. He no longer works for Firaxis, and he's making a Sims style game right now. And that's where his passion is in creating Sims style games. You don't fucking get it?
Okay.
But that's what he's working on now. So you were the baddest. He was the baddest ass. One of the baddest asses of game development when it came to the XCOM series, and now he's wasting all that talent on a Sims-style game. Whatever.
It's sometimes you just get burned out on that kind of, you know, on that kind of strategy. Maybe a Sim game will be fucking
literally never been anything as good as XCOM 2 in that genre. Midnight Sims came. Or Midnight Suns is good, but it's even, and that was directed by him, and even that's not as good as XCOM 2.
Right. Well, Midnight Suns was kind of a disappointment. Like,
it's not commercially, bad. Right? Commercially, yeah. It's not bad. Like, there's a lot of parts of that I like a lot, but it's no XCOM. Right. There's also a rumor right now that Resident Evil 1 remake is reportedly in development. I'm actually kind of okay with that because that game's so old, it is hard to play nowadays. Like, that's a PS1 game.
Okay, but I'm gonna throw this one out here.
Make a new game.
At what point are we gonna remake the remakes?
I don't know. It's Capcom. Like, whatever. They've been flagshipping all this remake bullshit. Like, these games are not bad, right? Are you not just Resident Evil Remakes company plus Street Fighter every, you know, 5 or 6 years, right?
Well, right. You know, if you're going to remake it once an actual generation, right? Every 20 years or so, you know, 20 years from now, they're going to look at their Resident Evil game and be like, hey, well, you know what? I have nostalgia for that remake that we did fucking 20 years ago. Let's remake the remake. Is it a redux at that point?
Like, at what point are they literally an Ouroboros?
Right, exactly. So, and that's one of the things that we've noticed over the last, short period of time, I'd say in the last, 5 years or so, these games are like, there's a push from my generation to remake these old games in the new engines so that we can kind of relive our greatest hits. Right. But it's stifling, new development. It's, you're putting development hours into a game that already exists. And, sure, there's going to be a whole nother generation that gets to experience that game, but you're not adding anything new. You're just you're polishing it, spit shine, and off to the bank with you,
Right.
I want some new stuff. I want to see new iterations of, different kinds of games. Make it happen.
Make it happen, Captain. All right. Jason, did you have any more bits? I'm sorry. I just went off on a tangent there.
Nope. You're good. You actually covered last one I had. So.
All right. Well, where can you find us?
Find us at tiltcast.com. Find us on Facebook and twitter.com/tiltcast. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/realtiltcast, and search for us on iTunes and Spotify. Subscribe.
Find some friends to show. You've got For the Love of Gaming and tvgp.tv. They cover gaming just like we do and play Destiny. With that, it's the end of the show.
All right. Peace.